Hi there, it's Anarchy Radio, December 2nd. Little Philip Glass going on there. Well, I'm still kind of trying to get back in the swim of things since India. I want to go back to that a little bit. First of all, a word on the events in Mumbai last week. I'm sure everybody's aware of the attacks in the very populous, 20 million people in Mumbai, which is actually still called Bombay. It's officially Mumbai, but nobody says that except the networks have to say it, I guess. And that's what it's called in the textbooks. Anyway, the point is, in case you didn't know, that's about Kashmir, the most northern state in India, northwest. It borders Pakistan, and it's part of India, but it has a Muslim majority. And there have been conflicts between Hindu nationalists and the Muslim majority in that state. There have been three wars over it between India and Pakistan since 1947, and both countries have nuclear weapons, which always makes it a little more interesting. And, well, what can you say? I mean, that's one layer of it. The oceans of blood spilled in the name of religions is nonstop. For example, right now in Nigeria, Muslims versus Christians, and in other places. I got an email from a friend in India about this. I don't think I'll mention the name. It's not necessary anyway, but was pointing out that the whole world is shocked, riveted for 3 or 4 days about the attacks there, the onslaught, almost 200 people killed. And the writer wants to know, what about the 300 Bihari laborers that are killed in fighting? They're just laborers. Or the 800, points out, the 800, more than 800 were killed when Naga rebels and the Indian army were fighting. Speaking of bystanders, or the 600 killed by the Naxal security forces, that's the Maoist armed forces in the central states of India, which have gotten pretty powerful, partly because of the huge corrupt do-nothing ruling classes. But anyway, and the email I got concludes, Indian nation has shed its pretense, the elite are India, and there were people just killed at random, but when you got these five-star hotels, that's the elite where they come to eat and confer and everything, and it was more that as the central focus. And I think the writer has a good point there. That's you don't even hear about any of the rest of it, but you hear an enormous amount about that. In terms of the talks, about 2 weeks ago now, when Alice and I were there, a couple of people said you didn't really say anything specific about that, so let me mention. And I did say that Rabi Shergill, a very popular rock musician, mainly made it possible, but he wasn't the only one. And I'm not going to give out the names, but there were a couple of other sources, especially one, an American who lives there, but the generosity was just great in many ways, on many levels, actually. The first talk was in Jaipur, southwest of New Delhi, and it's almost directly east from Mumbai. It's just inland a ways. It's not super far from Mumbai. And that was sponsored by a Gandhian Academy, kind of an open university thing. And it was an invitation only, it turned out. I mean, that's not up to me to, you know, to run these things or organize these things. And it was quite good. It was, maybe 40 people. It was like a big seminar room. It was taped, and there wasn't a whole lot of time. They didn't allot a whole lot of time for discussion. There wasn't a whole lot of Q&A, but it was good. Some of the people there, some of the faculty, are kind of ex-bureaucrats, and but there were some younger people and people that are not really of that stratum. I thought it was real enjoyable, and it was just such a receptive setup, and It was well done, the way it was carried off. It was very nice. Second one was at Nehru University, and it was right before finals, and they hadn't done a whole lot of publicity. Some of these dates were moved around kind of at the last minute, which is they take a more relaxed attitude. But that was good, and it was a similar kind of thing. It wasn't invitation only, but it was a kind of a big seminar thing, and some real good discussion. And as I probably said last week, lots of attentiveness, a lot of engaging with these theses or the questions, the ideas of green anarchy, anarcho-primitivism. New thing, but it seemed to connect because there was interest. There really was, and we could have, frankly, if it had been up to me, the discussion part would have gone a lot longer. It could have gone a lot longer. And then the last one was at Khalsa College, which is a college of Delhi University, the other major university in Delhi, city of 15 million, which is quite interesting because it's where Rabi went to school. And he was kind of a bad student. He was kind of a dropout, and he wasn't really that ardent a student. But when we came, they just rolled out the red carpet because he's so big, you know, and they were all just so thrilled, and we had a reception in the president's office and all these professors, and he's going, gee, I was such a washout, and this is fun, you know. Now I'm a little more successful, I guess. So, and I wanted to mention, if you want to see a music video that gives you quite a wonderful slice, kind of a fast-moving kind of postcard, I don't know what you call it, treatment of India, he's just shown in all kinds of settings and kind of rapid fire. You get a nice taste of, a little bit of India, plus his music. And it's about 3 or 4 years old is his first album. It has to do with the first of his two albums. Anyway, at Khalsa College, that was great. It was very fun. And Rabi wasn't mentioned. Oh, let me just spell that. Rabi as if it's rabbi. The two B's, and Shergill, Shergill. And I think if you just Google it, or Rabi Shergill songs, something like that, just Google it, you get it right away, I think. So he wasn't on the poster. The publicity was just, it just mentioned me. But the word got out that morning, and I think it was around noon, this thing was, and nothing starts on time. It's kind of like anarchists everywhere. But the word got out that Rabi was there. And it was just, so the place was just packed. It's just, you know, there's at least 500 people in this college auditorium there. And I said to him, it's a good thing you're with me because I got this big crowd. And of course it was just the opposite. Nobody had ever heard of me. But they were, and then after I spoke, and that was another really well done thing. And some very good, somewhat surprising comments by some of the people that were presenting at some of the professors about how this is what needs to be studied now, and this is extremely important, and that was a pleasant surprise. And then after the talk, then there was a break, and then Rabi performed, and the place just went mad, and there were, you know, everybody's wanting, you know, taking pictures and, you know, wanting autographs, and Rabi was kind of running around, so we left, and he was still scratching his head about how this is his old kind of alma mater, but prodigal son kind of thing. It was quite good. And speaking of talks, yesterday I met the Sociology of Media course, one of its last meetings. Christina teaches that, and that was interesting and kind of a plus because as I understood it, she just wanted me to talk a little about green anarchy. It was a week devoted to alternative media. How do you do this publication? You know, how do you put it together? It's kind of nuts and bolts. And, there was not a whole lot to say about that. It kind of got into why do you do this publication and what's the perspective? And it took up, and the whole hour and a half went by real fast. Lots of good discussion. Nobody left. It really got into a whole, seemingly very interested. The kids were about 100 in this class, and it was a good experience. Let me see. What else? I think we're going to get some action news, but maybe that'll wait. Let me get through another couple of things here. 541-346-0645. Oh, and by the way, Kathleen will be here next week. This Friday, well, I've got some announcements later, but it'll be at Northtown Books in Arcata, California, this Friday evening at 7. Kind of a little book thing there. And on Saturday the 13th is the first annual Humboldt Book Fair, Anarchist Book Fair. And then on the same day is the first annual Los Angeles Anarchist Book Fair. And I thought the, in 2 weeks, this network documentary group from Canada is going to be here. And I guess they are, but I haven't heard anything real new on that. And you're going to be gone on the 23rd.
I'll be gone on the 23rd, Tuesday the 23rd, yeah.
Okay.
I sent in my my email today.
To
my official I will be gone email.
That's a first,
yes.
Right? Okay.
Ah.
Gee, you feel all good now.
Yeah,
huh?
I sure do, man. I got to load off.
Just got to find somebody who can do, you know, like download the show and all that stuff. Yeah. Get it set to do if I can.
It's really, today it was just easy as all heck.
Nobody'd mess with the settings, huh, on the computer?
Nobody messed with them.
Gee.
It was pretty good.
Well, with this amount of time, I hope I can find somebody and just do it as usual, I guess, if I'm hoping to, planning to. This is something I just mentioned last week but didn't get into, and I thought of it yesterday, Toy Drive, you know, the annual stuff like that, on the, I think this is the front page of the local paper here in Eugene. Eugene police, Sergeant somebody, waits for kiddies to exit a SWAT truck at the Toys for, yeah, this is great. Let's have, yeah, the militarized police. Isn't that wonderful?
Sure.
Toys for tots. Murder for tots. I don't know.
Oh,
what,
yeah. Isn't that cute? I saw that photo too, yeah.
That's,
yeah.
You know, that's nobody bats an eye. Well, what it sort of connects to, sort of, is the fact that, somebody connected with the Human Rights Commission did indeed just undergo a 5 weeks training with the FBI. And I think there are several things of interest here. One is how secret this was. And this is all, none of this, I kind of cleared this with the people involved. Don't mind me talking about this. And this will become more well known. Carol Berg was looking for somebody there, by name of Francesca Levy Johnson, who is the city liaison to the Human Rights Commission, sits on the Human Rights Commission, and was looking her up for some reason, was down there near City Hall, and was told by somebody, oh, she's doing this FBI training. And Carol's response, I think, was kind of, say what? And then somebody else rushed in and kind of made it clear she wasn't supposed to say that, or he wasn't supposed to say that, I don't know who it was. But so then it became, what's that about? Why are they doing that? Why is the city paying for that? And the Human Rights Commission, which is basically a liberal watchdog in terms of the rights of people, and you don't have a lot of observance of people's rights on the part of the FBI. I mean, if you don't have a philosophical beef with the FBI, which I certainly do, it's just... thing is rife as we get deeper into the police state locally and everywhere else. So what's that about? Well, the kind of cover story was, well, don't get excited, it's about hate crimes, and well, it's a little bit about hate crimes, and the documents about that just came in today from I spoke to somebody on the phone about this, Lauren Regan, I think I can say that, and to speak, for example, first of all, about the secrecy thing, the FBI set up a certain non-profit kind of front group for these things, this kind of educational outreach, and in that way thought they would get around the FOIA access thing, the Freedom of Information thing, because, oh, it's not the FBI, it's actually this group here, which is just a front for the FBI. Well, it didn't really work in this case, so a lot of information came out. And it turns out that a lot of this is about briefing people in terms of keeping their eyes and ears open for the feds in terms of eco-terrorists and people like that. give us information. And so and it turns out there have been other people that have done this and haven't told anyone either. Like Dennis, is it Dennis Rickoff? Well, now he's part of the university, but he was, I think he was on the police commission. Bobby Green would be another one. And, well, anyway, it just seems, it reminds me of some other secret meetings that the city has had and which have blown up in their face. You know right away there's something fishy when they're trying to keep it quiet, when this wouldn't fly. So that's basically what that's about. And you might say, especially in light of the fact that Eugene passed one of these resolutions decrying the Patriot Act as a city, as a position of the city, and here these people are in bed with the FBI. So the whole thing really smells, and they're trying to shut people up, but it's too late. I mean, this is what happened, and the lack of transparency speaks to the content of this whole thing. And, you know, again, dare I say it, more police state kind of stuff going on. Yeah, I think we'll go to direct action stuff after the break here. Oh, here's a good one. I just got to get into this one right away. From the Prince of Wales, from Prince Charles. This really kills me. And somebody, this Marxist guy, sent it to me, and I don't know if that was intended to be kind of like, well, this guy sounds like he's sort of a primitivist. I guess that shows that you people are down with the royals or something. I don't even know. Maybe I'm just jumping to conclusions there. But he wrote a piece that was posted just a day or two ago, I believe, called "The Modern Curse That Divides Us from Nature." And I'm just going to take a few lines from this to give you the main thrust of this thing. What does our dependence upon technology do to our connection with nature? Dominant society has an absolute right over nature. We've lost something precious, what I might describe as an intuitive sense of our interconnectedness with nature. Okay, that's what this is all about. There's been a fundamental disconnection from nature. These are all quotes. And now we're at this stage where, among other things, he goes on to say that that modernism or modernity, contemporary modernity, I think is what this would translate as, people are forced to leave the land to live like factory farm chickens in mechanical boxes. Thus are millions more condemned to the same toxic future. Well, it sounds like Prince Charles is in the Earth Liberation Front, maybe, or something like that. And it doesn't even, you know, you expect, well, yeah, that's good, and then, but it'll have a stupid ending, and it'll be like, well, but I'm all in favor of technology, you know, I didn't mean, you know. And he does say something like, well, the end sentence says, the denial of our real relationship with nature has engendered dangerous alienation. But it does say something about how we need the best modern technology and science that works with the grain of nature. Well, that's, yeah, okay, that's the point, isn't it? Anyway, it's really kind of striking, and future King of England has become a primitivist, apparently. Well, 3460645. Well, why don't we take a musical break right now? That was Philip Glass, and this is Miles Davis in the break. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okie dokie. We'll be right back.
Abducted child is everyone's child.
Jada, age 14.
To get free Amber Alerts on your cell phone, go to wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
The views expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of KWVA Radio or the Associated Students of the University of Oregon. Anarchy Radio is an editorial collage providing analysis and opinions of John Zerzan and the community at large. Yes, it is. Well, we can all see that, less than a month since Obama's elected and, month and a half before he's inaugurated, it's already gone south. I wonder if all the euphoria is completely gone by now. Iraq, getting out of Iraq? Oh, that was just a kind of, which is probably why it's Bush's, Secretary of Defense, or will have. Dan Todd, by the way, isn't doing his show. The Dry River Collective, he's taking a break. Shout out to Dan if he's listening. But, maybe he'll be back. He had a good show, music and talk. Well, another thing, this is a great letter. This was Sunday's paper about biofuels. And speaking of Obama, to stay on the kind of thinner terrain here, you could get much deeper with all this, but when Christopher Calder points out that Obama is the greatest cheerleader for the false hope of biofuels, and as I discussed a little bit somewhat earlier, the global starvation has jumped way up since the planting of invasive biofuels on millions of acres, or millions of hectares, to use up the land and the water and the labor resources. That's the biggest killer. That's more than any other political thing. And this letter makes that claim that Mao and Pol Pot killed most people through foolish agricultural policies, not through executing people. I mean, I don't think he's exactly equating Obama with Pol Pot here, but, this is a serious thing. And, this is the famine for the world's poorest folks, made worse by biofuel production and speeding global warming as well. And, sugar cane for ethanol, soybeans for biodiesel, and the whole nine yards. But we got to keep everything running, and so millions may have to be sacrificed. Millions are being sacrificed. Okay, on to the news. Oh, wait a minute. No, I think first of all, I haven't read the whole thing, but it's a brand new book by a right winger in France. You may have heard of Bernard Henri Lévy. Left in Dark Times. It's a brand new book. And this guy is not upholding this guy. He's a right winger. He's a Zionist. He's also claims to have been, and is, he claims, an active anti-racist champion over the past several years. So, and he even claims to some degree he's part of the left. It's kind of hard not to be some part of the left in France. But, and the book talks about the cadaver of the left, just as I have at times, or all the time. And there's a lot to, if you want to do an autopsy, there's just tons of stuff. But, for example, one of the things that I find this repulsive as well, Carl Schmitt is now a big darling of a lot of theorists on the left, including Telos magazine, the theory magazine right here in the U.S. Carl Schmitt was a Nazi jurist. He justified the completely authoritarian, to put it mildly, legal system of National Socialist Germany, and even wrote texts which justified the Nuremberg laws, the anti-Jewish pre-Holocaust Nuremberg laws. And Levy, he's trying to portray this book as kind of sympathetic to the left. There were great parts of the left, and you know, you might be able to guess which they are, the ones that don't go very far, since he's basically a person of the right. But the book does make some interesting points along the way, and not to be confused with where this guy is coming from and what his own agenda is. But yeah, he brings up a lot of things. One of the things, and I guess you could, to some degree, even apply this to Obama. It's somewhat particularly French, but not totally so. And that is the complete, you could say, pretty much complete opportunistic bankruptcy of the left. And part of the strategy, starting in the early 80s, I believe, of the left, if it's kind of staggering if you don't already know this, was to outflank the right on the right. So in other words, you become more right-wing than the right in order to, I mean, it's just so completely unprincipled and ridiculous. So now these leftist parties, for example, are a complete joke, and the left all across the board has kind of disappeared almost in France to a large degree. It only exists on paper. So some of the book is somewhat interesting. Anyway, I don't recommend where this guy's coming from, but there are some valid things. The left in dark times, he's kind of a voice in the wilderness, and he should be, I guess. But okay, on to some action news, and I'm still not totally in the loop for, in terms of compiling good, interesting cases of militancy around the world, but I've managed to get some of them. And I think it was about 10 days ago, an anarchist in Iceland. It's always good to talk about action in Iceland if you want to make the point that there's action everywhere. He was arrested for participating in environmental blockades 2 years before. And so anyway, the interesting point is the complete blowback, the reaction to this was great. They really, really went wild. And it's, you know, it's a very small place. But last Saturday, some 200 to 500 people, it's kind of a vague crowd estimate here, but those people showed up at the police station. I think maybe there's only one in Reykjavik, the capital, demanding the release of this guy. Well, it ended up in clashes. People broke the windows out of the police station, the tear gas, and he was released pretty darn quick, the same day, in fact, because maybe because of that. It just sounds like it might have been that. And more banks, the Royal Bank of Canada up in B.C., their windows have been smashed out a lot because they are the RBC is a major sponsor of the 2010 games, just part of the militancy there. And Thailand, this has been in the news quite a bit, for about a week, the two airports there in Bangkok, including the one that's really a big hub of transportation and commerce for all of Southeast Asia, occupied by anti-government protesters, two commercial airports. And the government is, they got thousands of people in there, so it's maybe going to get violent. It's maybe going to, because this airport siege, well, two of them, it's been going on. And on Saturday, it was reported that the 1,000 demonstrators at the bigger airport, international airport, had grabbed up a cop, or holding a cop hostage. I think there's going to be a lot of news breaking out pretty soon about that. There just might be a showdown. And I probably won't get to this really till next week, but you might have heard of the Tarnak 9. Interesting case. There was sabotage of high-speed trains in France, and Tarnak is a very small village in central France, and there's major repression going on because the state has apparently been kind of stymied by what's been going on and the support that it has too. That's another interesting thing. There are now international groups of support, and it's a very big story, especially in France, that these nine accused of criminal association for the purposes of terrorist activities. And it sounds like quite a big reach, but they I think they're frustrated. And anyway, maybe I'll get to that story in a little depth next time. Anti-surveillance activities from England, Australia, and Pennsylvania. Various cameras and including speed measuring systems have been burned or stolen or, in other words, in many ways disabled. Read about this in InfoShop News today. England has been known for people just taking a club to the surveillance cameras. They have a lot of them. I don't know if they have as many as here. Probably not, but... let's see. On the night of the 21st, still having trouble keeping track of what day it is, having come back from Asia. But on the night of the 21st, what was that, about 10 days ago, something like that, 100,000 salmon were liberated from two gigantic industrial fish farms, and the whole fish farms thing on many continents, in Canada and South America, a lot of different places. This happened in Sweden, northern Sweden. The amount of pollution and the threat to biodiversity, the threat to wild species, just the whole thing has been gigantic. It's been devastating the world's oceans, and that's a quote from a group of scientists. And there is, and the group that issued a communique, having done this, having taken credit for this, they realized that it releases a lot of pollution to do this, but what else are they going to do? I mean, they go into some discussion of that, but they're trying to do what they can to stop these operations and the really unhealthy in many ways of these fish farms. And on the same day, in Lima, Peru, a zoo was hit by the ALF, and a whole lot of birds and other animals. Oh, lots of birds. Let's see. And they carried away two jungle cats, two ocelots in cages that they designed for them. They're transferring them to their natural habitat. I don't remember hearing these raids on zoos. This is, I guess it's a pretty big zoo. In the early morning of about 10 days ago, they cut and opened more than 30 cages. Okay, it's ALF. It's all over the place. And also, ALF-wise, this is down in Southern California again. Once again, UCLA and the animal torture going on down there has been targeted very systematically. This is the 25th. This is last week. some individual named Goran Lachan, who studies human eating disorders like anorexia and obesity by, well, it sounds like a pretty ugly thing that they do to velvet monkeys in terms of painful stimuli and sticking electrodes in their skulls and then killing them and so forth. They give this guy's address. Well, they put an incendiary device under his car. I'm going to read some of this communique as it is the holiday season. When Santa went into his knapsack to pull out his last piece of coal, he discovered that there wasn't any left, just a lone incendiary device. Santa thought this was the perfect gift to give a monster like Lacan and placed it under his car. As the sun was coming up, he headed back to the North Pole to check his list for other names of naughty vivisectors. Santa wished Lacan was in the car at the time the fuel ignited, but hopefully he will be next time. Oh, whoa. Santa sends this message to all vivisectors this holiday season. Those who experimented on primates in the past currently are thinking about it in the future. It may not be tomorrow or next month that his elves, it's spelled ALFs, will find you so that he can bring you other gifts you deserve. Santa never forgets to give out presents yes, okay. And this weekend, I won't be here this weekend, but there's a little announcement here for benefit for Oregon environmental prisoner Daniel McGowan. And he has been being abused lately. They've been moving him around to, I can't remember if I said this before recently, but two different grand juries. He's been refusing to cooperate just as he did in the initial prosecution. And now he's at Marion. And I remember being in court when one of the defense attorneys said, well, if you stick on these big sentences, don't make it sound like it's very little, as if they're going to get to go to some nice medium security place. There is nothing that would prevent them from going to the worst joints, the most violent joints in the country. And I remember the government lawyer getting up and saying, well, that's ridiculous. You know, you're just trying to make a point and trying to add some juice to your thing, and that's silly. Nobody's thinking of that. That's not going to happen. That's precisely what happened to McGowan. Marion. You may know about the federal Marion, which is very renowned over the years for being high isolation, high brutalization, just a very nasty place. So that's where he's at, and there are going to be a number of bands, mostly folk, old-time acoustic musicians. The Underscore Orchestra from Portland, Brenna Sahajian from Riot Folk from Portland, and the McKenzie River Boys, local bluegrass. And that's at the Morning Glory this Saturday at 8, from 8 to 11 at 4th and Willamette on Saturday the 6th. Oh, well, we're just clicking right along. I see that Hawaii has got a plan. They're going to try to do something about their dependency on fossil fuels, pretty much. Well, if that's your economy, it all comes in on oil from somewhere else. And looking at the big flooding in Venice, as was pointed out here today in the New York Times, Hawaii is going to be underwater one of these here days at this rate. So now they're trying to think of something. But, you know, if it's along the lines of the usual routes, the usual, quote, solutions, it's... And how does that contend with global warming? How does that slow down the swamping of these islands? And Arctic Ocean temperature reached record high this autumn, and you know, this is such a kind of a banality. I often just refer to it in passing when I do a talk, but it's just kind of the bottom line kind of thing. Here's a story from last Wednesday that greenhouse gases in the atmosphere have reached a new record high and show no sign of leveling off. It's a trend of rising emissions, the accelerating trend. that began with the Industrial Revolution in the late 18th century. And that's the exact point by point. When that was measurable, global overheating was measurable. And every single point of industrialization is a point of global warming. And that's the name of that. But it's kind of the elephant in the room. It's absolutely obvious. And people say, oh, well, there were other warming cycles. Well, sure there were. Yeah, there were other warming. This is the only one caused by industrialism. It's the only one that you could do something about. And, I mean, there's a lot of other things you could say about how unprecedented this one is in terms of the time frame and so on. But I think it's worth mentioning that. The oceans are becoming more acidic faster. And, of course, that harms sea animals and cuts down the ocean's ability to absorb CO2. That's going on faster than previously thought, according to a University of Chicago study that was just released. Okay. Yeah, and meanwhile, this is great. This is from Oregon Magazine, right here at the University of Oregon, the Oregon Quarterly. This is really... a not thought out article here called, it's an excerpt from a book. This is an essay. Yeah, it's taken from a book called Fat World. I don't know why it's called Fat World. That's not really what this is about. It's about Haber-Bosch, which is a gigantic fertilizer combine in Germany. They have factories the size of cities, and they burn 1% of all the energy used by humans each year. That's how gigantic. I mean, I didn't even know. It's one whole percent. And they make hundreds of thousands of tons of nitrogen fertilizer.
I bet they do.
But that's the wonderful thing. Of course, last week I was reading this thing about, just one example, Eastern Europe. They have noticed that the soils are nitrogen poisoned. All these wonderful fertilizers are totally poisoning a lot of the soils in Eastern European countries. But the article says, this sounds like Noam Chomsky wrote this, consider that if all these Haber-Bosch plants in the world were to shut down today, more than 2 billion people would starve to death. And half the nitrogen in your body is synthetic, the product of one of these factories. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, my God.
Is this something from the... I don't know who wrote this, but this is great. Just with a straight face. Yeah, we need more of that. But, yeah, we got to keep going. We got to keep poisoning everything. It doesn't even mention the global warming part of it when you've got burning 1% of all the energy. And one could also not forget that the biofuels. Where does the energy come for growing the biofuels? Not to mention the fertilizer. I mean, it's all totally linked together. This is just great. Yeah, people would have starved. Malthus would have been right, except for these fantastically huge mega factories, these industrial plants that create all the synthetic nitrogen. So you can have industrial agriculture so that you can ruin everything. But it's just a good, healthy way to keep going, though. I mean, what could be wrong with that? I don't want to be a naysayer.
You got to get your nitrogen somewhere.
Exactly. We need more and more of it. Yeah, it's perfectly sane. And I just know that Obama is going to do something about it, I think, along with all of his friends. Oh, well, I wrote something which Alice has called What's Love Got to Do With It? It's all about affect. It's all about... Carl laughs. He's laughing already. It's about emotions as culture and suffering and love and stuff like that. Maybe might read it next week. Catherine will be here. It'll keep. But a lot of things are happening that are... I didn't even get to too many things. Well, we have time for a few quick items here. pregnant women who used hairspray during the first trimester of their pregnancy, if they have boys, they're twice as likely to have genital defects, serious genital defects from hairspray. It's a big Newsweek piece about kids in the trailer camps post-Katrina, these big trailer camps, government trailers say in Baton Rouge, alarmingly high rate of all kinds of health problems. And these are high-risk kids already. You know, that's the name of that tune, and it's all about asthma, mental health, endless list here. They're, the wonder of the Katrina aid and recovery knows no bounds. National forest visits to national forest down 13% in the last two or three years, even dropping, yeah. I mean, it's partly because of fees, it's partly because of the price of gas, but it's a lot to do with just being plugged into electronic entertainment, and who needs to go out to the woods ever. But right here in Eugene, the University of Oregon's Environmental Leadership Program is working with the local schools. There's a piece from Friday. Sustainability in the schools has dividends. What I love about this, it's usually have a keyword like this. This involves real-world environmental education and projects. Real world. That's how you know it's not real world. It's just more fantasy. It's like voting. Yeah, this is real. This is reality. This is realism. This is some real stuff. This isn't just some theory. You know, this is stuff that you can distract yourself with while the while it all marches along according to its own dimensions and categories and everything that you're not supposed to think about. Oh, but I should mention, well, along with all the fresh week's worth of mall shootings, of course, the Walmart worker that was stampeded, just trampled to death on the day after Thanksgiving. This poor temp worker at Walmart, of course, known for its horrendous practices, like they give people 30 hours a week. And then they actually only schedule them for 29, because if you gave them 30, then you'd have to have some benefits. Anyway,